prior to Matan Torah, the Ovis were Mutsuvim on the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Naya, like any of the other Umos HaOlam were, like all B'nei Noach were. The only distinguishing factor in terms of mitzvahs between the Ovis and the rest of humanity was that the Ovis were a distinct group. In other words, the descendants of Avraham Avinu were a distinct group amongst the B'nai Noach, insofar as they had a specific mitzvah which nobody else had, over and above the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and that was the mitzvah of Mila. Avraham Avinu was commanded the mitzvah of Mila, and from that point and onwards, the clan of Avraham Avinu, the descendants of Avraham Avinu, had an extra mitzvah which none of the other B'nai Noach had, and that was the mitzvah of Mila. So the entire human race were obligated in keeping seven mitzvahs, and the family of Avraham Avinu were obligated in an eighth mitzvah, which was Bris Mila. In very general terms, Chazal tell us that the Ovis were Mekayim mitzvahs in general. There is a Maimon Chazal, which the Gemara brings, that the Ovis were Mekayim mitzvahs even prior to Matan Torah. There are definitely certain mitzvahs that they were Mekayim. There's also definitely certain mitzvahs leisah said that they were not Mekayim. Yaakov Avinu married two sisters, which, according to Halacha, is prohibited. After Matan Torah, that would have been prohibited. But in very general terms, Chazal say that they were Mekayim mitzvahs. Whether they were Mekayim mitzvahs in exactly the same way that we're Mekayim mitzvahs or not is debatable. There are different opinions about that, as to whether they actually did the mitzvahs in the same way as we do the mitzvahs, or was it more that they knew what the quote-unquote nyonim of mitzvahs were, and therefore did things which had the same inyan. To say that they actually were Mekayim mitzvahs prior to Matan Torah does create certain technical problems. Where do they get a lulav and an estrog from in the midbar, etc., etc., which is discussed. It's not a cynicism. It's a discussion which goes on in the Mefarshim as to exactly how they were Mekayim mitzvahs. However, it's interesting that there are numerous sources in Chazal that there were two mitzvahs which already at the time of the Ovis they were very makpid about, and which they certainly kept seemingly in exactly the same format that we keep these mitzvahs today. Chazal, and this is based on a Medrash Rabbah in Bereishis and Perek Chaf Beis, Chazal say that they were Shemrei Shabbos. The others kept Shabbos in exactly the same way as we keep Shabbos. And this started, say Chazal, from the time of Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon actually personally experienced the first Shabbos that existed in the world, and he experienced the Kedusha of the first Shabbos that existed in the world. He saw the Kedusha of the first Shabbos that existed in the world. He saw that it was a day which brought Menucha, rest, to the world. And in fact, he responded to the understanding of what Shabbos was all about by saying the capital Tehillim of Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos, which according to Chazal was authored by Adam HaRishon. It was forgotten, say Chazal, and then Moshe Rabbeinu brought it back into people's awareness. But the actual author of Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos, say Chazal, was Adam HaRishon when he experienced the first Shabbos, and from that point in onwards, Adam HaRishon, and the line of Adam HaRishon, which resulted in Avraham Avinu, which resulted in the family of Avraham Avinu, there was a constant Shmiras Shabbos within that line. When Klal Yisrael was sent into Golus in Mitzrayim, they also kept Shabbos. And even though, whilst in Egypt, they were slaves, and they had to work, nevertheless, Chazal say, and this is a medrash in Shemais, beginning of Shemais in Perek Hay, Chazal say that they had written texts which told them that there was going to come a point in time when they were going to be redeemed from Mitzrayim, when they were going to go out of Mitzrayim, and what was going to happen to them. They had this written down in texts, say Chazal. They had Megillis, that's the word that Chazal used, and that they used to spend Shabbos reading these Megillis, which told them that the Ribbono Shel Olam would eventually redeem them from Mitzrayim, and that's what kept their morale up as they were in servitude in Mitzrayim. And when, Chazal say, Paro wanted to increase the servitude by forcing them to work on Shabbos, in the very first perek of the Medrash on Shmois, Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro, and he argued with Paro, and he said, Misha yesh lo yeved, if somebody has a slave, im eino noch yom echad b'shavua, if the slave won't stop working for one day in the week, who mess? The slave will die. Ve'ilu avodim, ve'ilu avodecho, therefore your avodim, meaning Klal Yisrael, im eino tomei nicham yom echad b'shavua, he mess him. If you don't give them one day off, they're going to die of exertion. To which Paris answered back and said, you're right. So I'll give them one day off, you go decide what day to give them off. To which Chazal say, Halach Moshe v'tikin lo emesa Shabbos l'nuach boy. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, great. So now they can carry on with their Shmiras Shabbos. So here already we have kama indications that Klal Yisrael was Shomer Shabbos long before Matan Torah, and there are even more riyas for this. The second mitzvah which Klal Yisrael were makpid about even prior to Matan Torah is also recorded in the Chazal. Chazal tell us that Klal Yisrael were makpid about Shechita prior to Matan Torah, and they were makpid about Macholos Asuris. Not only, say Chazal, were they careful not to eat behemoth tmeis, and only to eat behemoth tahiris, and they knew what were behemoth tmeis and what were behemoth tahiris. How did they know? Because Noach was already told which behemoths were Tumeus and which behemoths were Tahiris, because he took a different number of behemoths Tahiris into the Teva than he took behemoths Tumeus. So therefore God had to tell him which behemoths are considered to be behemoths Tumeus and which behemoths are considered to be behemoths Tahiris. But in addition, say Chazal, they only ate meat which was Shechted Kedin. When Yitzchok tells Esav go out into the field, hunt, and bring me that which you hunt down. The Pasuk says that Yitzchak said to Esav, go out, sonok elecha, take your instruments and go out and hunt for me a animal that I should have food. To which Chazal, again, it's a medrash in Perek Samachay of Bereishis, Chazal say, what did he have to say to him? Take your instruments and go and hunt for me an animal to kill, to eat. Obviously, if he would have just said to him, go and hunt for me an animal to kill and to eat, he would have to take instruments to catch the animal and to kill the animal, because Eva Menachai was already also from the time of Noach, because Eva Menachai is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach that all humanity were obligated in. So Lichura, this Sona Eskelecho, or Sona Kelecho, is superfluous. To which Chazal say that when he said Sona Kelecho, what he meant was sharpen your knife, sharpen your chalef, shaloi ta'achileni nevelus utreifus, that the shechita should be a kosher shechita, that you shouldn't give me to eat something which is a nevela or a treifa. Therefore, in this week's parsha, when the brothers return to Egypt together with Binyamin, the pasuk says, Vaya Yosef itom es Binyamin. Yosef saw Binyamin with them. Vayomer asher al beisai. So he said to the person who was responsible for running the kitchen in his house, Havei es ha'anoshim ha'baiso, bring all these people, meaning the brothers, including Binyamin, bring them to my house, utvoyach tevach v'hochein, and get the meat slaughtered and prepare it. The Gemara in Chulin on Daf Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph says that what did he mean when he said utvoyach tevach v'hochein, get the meat slaughtered and prepared? Says the Gemara, para lohem es beis hashchito. He tore open the beis hashchito for them. Says Rashi, what does that mean? Says Rashi on the Gemara there in Chulin, he showed them the slaughtered animal, where it was slaughtered, so that they should be able to see that the behemoth was slaughtered kedasa kedin, that it was macholas mutoris and it was not macholas asuris, because b'nei Yankov was shema the mitzvah of shechita, even though Torah hadn't yet been given, but they had a kabbalah me'aviseihem, they had a tradition to keep certain mitzvahs, and this was one of the mitzvahs that they were very makpid about. There is an interesting fact, and that is that in 99.9% of the years, it is very, 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 very rare that this won't happen. In 99.9% of the years, it can occur, but it's very rare. But in 99.9% of the years, Chanukah will always include one or two parashiyos from the three parashiyos of Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash. And 99.9% Chanukah, if it only has one Shabbos within it, like this year, the one Shabbos will be Parshas Miketz. Parshas Miketz, one can say, in general terms, with very minor exceptions, always occurs on Chanukah. There is a Shilte Giboyrim in Perek Bameh Madlikin, in the Sugya of Chanukah, which, if one wouldn't know that the Shilte Giboyrim says this, and somebody would say it over without saying where it comes from, one would think that this comes from some Chassidish Rebbe somewhere, it is Tish. But it's a Shilte Giboyrim. And the Shilte Giboyrim says the following. The Pasuk says in this week's Parsha that Yosef said to the person who was responsible for the kitchen in his house, the Utvoyach Tevach V'Hochein, slaughter meat and prepare it. Says the Shilte Giboyrim the following, Barayv Hashonim, in the vast majority of years, Chanukah Chal B'Parshas Miketz. Parshas Miketz will always come about to be Chanukah, because Chanukah falls always on Parshas Miketz. V'Simoncha, and there is a simon to Chanukah in Parshas Miketz. What's the simon to Chanukah in Parshas Miketz? Says the Shilte Giboyrim, the three words, V'tvoyach Tevach V'Hochei. Says the Shilte Giboyrim, Haches Mitevach. Take the last letter of the word Tevach, and it's Ches. Then says the Shilte Giboyrim, take the word V'Hochein. If you take the osius of the word V'Hochein and the last letter of the word Tevach, which is a Ches, and you put them together and you jumble them around, you end up with Chanukah. So that's the simon, says the Shilte Giboyrim, in the Parsha of Miketz, that Chanukah will always come out to be round the Parsha of Miketz. Now, as I said, if there wouldn't be a Shilte Giboyrim, I would say, nice Siddush Avertel, which is meaningless. But it's a Shilte Giboyrim. So if the Shilte Giboyrim says this, then there's something here. But Lechura is like a Medrash Pli of this. What on earth is the connection between that which is being told to us in Parshas Miketz, or in Parshas Vayigash for that matter, or in Parshas Vayeshev? In other words, what's the content of these parashas, and what specifically the content of these three words, v'tovayach tevach v'hochein, that it should have something at all to do with Chanukah? What on earth does it have to do with Chanukah? These parashas are talking about what happened, basically, to Yosef. It's the biography of Yosef, including the fact that he ended up in Mitzrayim, and including the fact that eventually his father and his brothers also ended up in Mitzrayim, which eventually resulted in the beginning of the Golus. What's that got to do with Tvoyach Tevach V'Hochein and Chanukah? If you take the three parshas of Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, it starts off with the pasuk Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megurei Oviv Be'eretz Knan. These three parshas start off with the pasuk which tells us that Yaakov was sitting in Eretz Yisrael, and then problems start. There's tension between Yosef and his brothers, and that creates a whole series of events. Events which create events, which create events, which create events, which at the end of the day tell us, as we said, the entire biography of Yosef from the day in which he leaves Yaakov Avinu's home until he becomes the Moshel, the ruler of Mitzrayim, and his brothers and his father end up in Mitzrayim. The final pasuk of these three parshas is Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim be'eretz Goshen. Starts with Vayeshev Yaakov in Eretz Yisrael and ends up with Vayeshev Yaakov in Goshen. And if you look at the chain of events, it's a very interesting chain of events. What happens here is that the brothers don't like him. The brothers don't like him because of the Ksenis Pasim which his father makes him, which results in them selling him as an Eved to Mitzrayim on the basis of all sorts of false accusations that they make against him. He ends up in Mitzrayim, and on the basis of all sorts of false allegations that the wife of Potiphar makes against him because he doesn't want to play ball with her, he ends up in jail. And because he ends up in jail, he perchance, quote unquote, happens to meet two high officials of Paro. And because he happened to meet the two high officials of Paro, and they happened to tell him about their dreams, and he happens to interpret their dreams, therefore by chance, the Psara Mashkim, when he's present at a later point in time, when Paro is upset that he has a dream and nobody can interpret the dream for him, tells Paro that there's a guy in jail who's very good at interpreting dreams, because he did a good job at interpreting my dream. And because of that, Yosef not only gets out of jail, but because of that, Yosef ends up being the ruler of entire Mitzrayim. And because he becomes the ruler of the entire Mitzrayim, therefore he has the ability to be able to bring his father, to be able to bring his brothers to Mitzrayim, and to put them in the best location in Eretz Goshen. And Chazal, in Maseches Shabbos, when they're describing this whole story of Yaakov ending up in Eretz Goshen, ending up in Mitzrayim, Chazal say, Ra'u hoyo Yaakov avinu leireid leMitzrayim b'shal shalois shel Barzel. Yaakov should have been taken away to Mitzrayim, which was Golus, basically. He was taken from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim in chains, in the way that people who are exiled are taken away into exile. Elo sheschusoi gormoloi. There was a certain schus out there, which was the reason why, even when Yaakov Avinu has to go into Golus, he goes into Golus b'kovod melachim, as the son of the Moshel of Mitzrayim, and ends up in the best location in Mitzrayim. In other words, Chazal tell us the entire chain of events that start off with the brothers hating him, and every single event which follows event, which follows event, which follows event, is all in order that Yaakov should end up in Golus in Mitzrayim. And why does Yaakov have to end up in Golus in Mitzrayim? Says Rashi there on the Gemara. Shehare al pigzeir is Golus yorod l'sham. Because Yaakov has to go to Mitzrayim because this is a gzeira which was years beforehand. Nigzar. That Yaakov has to go and therefore Klal Yisrael have to go into Golus. In other words, every single thing that happened to Yosef
The entire chain of events that happened to Yosef, they're all just simply a preparation. They're all just simply a pre-stage for one objective and for one aim. That Yaakov Avinu should end up going to Mitzrayim, because that is the kiyum of the Golus, which was already told to Avraham Avinu, Bibris Bein Absorim, that his descendants were going to go into Golus. But there was somewhere around a schus that created a hechatimtza, that the going out to Golus of Yaakov should be in the most comfortable manner possible, and not Bishal Shalois Shabbazel, which would have been the normal way of going. But Chazal don't tell us what the schus was. They just say there was a schus here. And because this schus was around, that's why it happened in this way. As we said, the Gzeira of Golus was a Gzeira which was told already to Avraham Avinu at the Bris Bein Absorim. This Yerida of Yaakov to Mitzrayim, which resulted in Shibud Mitzrayim, was the very first, the premier Golus of Klal Yisrael, of Am Yisrael, which is the preparatory Golus for all the Golius that will happen to Klal Yisrael in the entirety of the history of Klal Yisrael until Bias HaMashiach. And because this Golus is a preparatory Golus, it has to prepare Klal Yisrael for all the Goluyos that are going to occur after this. Therefore, the Ashgacha chose one individual by the name of Yosef, who lemaisa, when you think about it, was the first Jew in the history of the world who was sent out to Golus, because he got to Mitzrayim before his father and before his brothers. And the whole point of sending Yosef into Golus prior to Yaakov and prior to his brothers is because Yosef has to act as a prototype. Yosef has to act as an example. Yosef has to represent to all future generations how does the Jew survive Golus. Because in the future generations, when Jews are going to go into Golus, there is always going to be the fear. And there's always going to be the possibility, and indeed the probability, that when Jews are in Golus, and a part and parcel of a non-Jewish society, they will eventually, as indeed happens, assimilate within the non-Jewish society. So Yosef has to represent the Jew who doesn't assimilate into the non-Jewish society. The life of Yosef in Mitzrayim is meant to represent to the Jew how a Jew is meant to live in Golus, and how a Jew is meant to survive in Golus. And it's very possible that this is the schus of Yaakov that Chazal are talking about. All the years that Yaakov suffered from the fact that he had no idea where Yosef was, and he had no idea what happened to Yosef, all those years of suffering were worth it, because he didn't have to go down to Mitzrayim like a normal exile goes out into exile, Bishal Shalosh and Basel. But he went bekovered as the son of the Moshe. Why? Because that's the way it had to be. Why? Because he had a schus. What was his schus? His schus was that his son Yosef was going to represent the Klal Yisrael for all future deiros, how a Jew should act in Golus. As we said, the Ovis, prior to Matan Torah, were makbid about Shechita, and they were makbid about Shabbos. Yosef was the only Jew in the entirety of Mitzrayim until his brothers and his father arrived there. Nevertheless, Yosef kept these two mitzvahs. He was makbid the whole time he was there on Shechita, and he was makbid the whole time he was there on Shabbos. How do we know this? Say Chazal, we learn this out from the Pasuk. Where is the Pasuk in this week's parasha? What is the Pasuk in this week's parasha that we learn it out from? Say Chazal in Perek Tzadi Beis of the Medrash Rabbah on Bereishis. The Pasuk says, Tvoyach Tevach V'Hochein. Say Chazal, Ein V'Hochein Elo Shabbos. When the Torah uses the word V'Hochein, it's referring to Shabbos. How do I know this, say Chazal? Because that's what the Pasuk says. V'hoya b'yayim ha'shishi v'heichinu es asher yoviyu, in reference to Shabbos. So the word achona in the Torah refers to Shabbos, which is a raya, say Chazal. Hado omras sheshoma Yosef ha'shabbos kodim shenitnatan. The Yosef kept Shabbos in Mitzrayim even before it was given, the mitzvah of Shabbos. How do we know that Yosef kept Shechita? Again, from this pasuk, the Tevayach Tevach V'Hochein. As we said, Rashi says that the Tevayach Tevach means that he shows in the base of Shechita that he kept the mitzvah of Shechita. When the Torah in Shmos, in Perek Lamed Aleph, talks about the mitzvah of Shabbos, the Torah says, Es Shabbosai Tishmoiru. Ki oisi beinei ubeineichem. Torah is an ois, Shabbos is an ois. It's a sign made between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ladas ki ani Hashem mekadeshchem. What is the pasuk saying? That the ois of Shabbos, the kedusha of Shabbos, that is the symbol of the Kedusha of Yisrael, of the Kedusha of a Jew. In the same way as Shabbos is more Kaddish than other days of the week, so Am Yisrael are more Kaddish than the other Ummah Yisraelim. And therefore Shabbos represents Ikar Yahdus. Shabbos is the Ikar in Yiddishkeit. The way a Jew observes Shabbos defines his Jewishness. The way a Jew observes Shabbos defines his connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I always say over the Moshel, I've said it over many times. The Chofetz Chaim's Moshel, that if you go by a store and the door is closed, that doesn't mean that the store owner has gone bankrupt. All that means is he's gone on vacation. Says the Chofetz Chaim, when do you know that the store owner has gone bankrupt? When he takes the sign down. If you pass the store and there's no sign anymore, then you know that the store's closed. It's over. Says the Chofetz Chaim, Shabbos is an ois. It's a sign. It's the sign over the store. Says the Chofetz Chaim. Jews can be over averus, says the Chofetz Chaim. They haven't bankrupted. They haven't closed down. They're going away on vacation. Fine. The minute the Jew is not makbid on Shabbos, says the Chofetz Chaim, he's taken the sign down. I asked another Gadol, together with Rav Lapium, together with Rabbi, one of the biggest Siddur Rebbes today in America. And we asked him, what would you define as the defining point to say that this is the defining point of whether there is still Yiddishkeit by a person or is not Yiddishkeit by a person. What would you define as being crossing the line to say there's no remnant of Yiddishkeit left? And therefore to bring him back is going to be a very, very difficult job. So he said to us, I don't know, but Chazal tell us. Shabbos. He says, that's what Chazal say. Ki oisi. Shabbos defines the Jew. The hakpod on Shabbos, as the Chofetz Chaim says, is a sign on the store. If you take that down, then the store's gone. The store's finished. The store's closed. It's bankrupt. It's over. In reference to Shechita, the Pasuk says, V'ivdaltem bein abahima ateir litzmeo, V'yisem likdoshim ki ani Hashem, V'avdil eschem min ho'amim li yoisli. Again, the Pasuk says, Mefurish, that the Inyan of Macholis Asureis is the defining factor between the Jew and the non-Jew. That's what defines the Jew as a Jew. And Chazal say on that Pasuk, and Rashi quotes it, Im atem mavdili mehem, if you keep away from Macholis Asureis, Hariatam Shali, then you belong to me. V'im lav hariatam shal nevuchadnezzar v'chaveirov. Because that's the defining factor. And I would venture to suggest that there is a logic in this. Because a Jew, as the Balei Tanya writes in the beginning of Sefer HaTanya, the Jew is moved off from the non-Jew because the Jew has a nefesh elokis, which a non-Jew doesn't have. A non-Jew has an nefesh bahamis, but he doesn't have a nefesh elokis. Says the Balei Tanya, what is a nefesh elokis? It's words. What does it mean? Chelek elokai mimal. What does that mean? Says the Balei Tanya, what it means is that the Jew has a sensitivity to elokus and to ruchnius that most non-Jews don't have. A Jew is more sensitive to ruchnius and to elokus than a non-Jew, irrespective of what his shmiras hamitzvahs are. Doesn't matter how removed he is from shmiras hamitzvahs, but he has a certain sensitivity to divinity and he has a certain sensitivity to ruchnius. And the Rebbeinu Shlom took this sensitivity and he placed it within a guf. And he said to the Jew, you can be running around for 120 years inside a guf. Just like an animal. But your guf is different. Because there's a nefesh elokis inside it. And your job in this world is to turn the guf. That the guf should be a projection of the nefesh elokis. But if you eat macholis asurois, then the result is that it's Megashim the Guf. There is every single Aveira that exists in the Torah is an Aveira which a person does. And maybe metaphysically, maybe by osmosis, it has an effect on the person. Certainly does by osmosis and metaphysically have an effect on the person. But it's not something direct. It's an outside, external act that a person did with one of his limbs. That's the Maisa Aveira. Macholis Asuris is the only Aveira the person does. We're having committed the Aveira becomes part and parcel of him. His guf absorbs part and parcel of the Issa. The Chefta of Issa that he ate becomes a part of his guf, and his guf becomes a Chefta of Tuma. And that's the Pshat in Chazal. The Macholis Asuris and Matamtum Isis Alev. What does that mean, the Matamtum Alev? It's words. They block
the Aveda of the Nefesh Elokis, because the Guf becomes a Chaticha de Yisura. That's what Machal Rasuras is. Yosef HaTzadik was the first Jew in Golus. And he understood that if the Jew wants to survive in Golus, the Ribbono Shel Olam can overlook all sorts of averus that the Jew does in Golus. And the Ribbono Shel Olam can say, and can be melamed zchus, what do you want? It's a metzias of living in Golus, of being influenced in Golus. But there are two things which the Ribbono Shel Olam can't overlook, because that's the yesod of Yadus. That's what makes the Jew into the Jew, and without it, he's not a Jew. And that's Shabbos and Macholos Asuras. V'horaya, in the history of Klal Yisrael, any point where there was a gzeiras shmad, at any point where Jews were persecuted on a religious level, they were always with geyser on two things, Shmiras Shabbos and on Shechita. Those were the first two anti-Jewish laws. And this already started in the Gezerah of Hanukkah. Gozru ala Shabbos, v'helu chazir ala mizbeach, say Chazal. They took the chazir, which is the ultimate in ma'acholos asuris, and they tried to give it to the Ribbono Shel Olam to eat. Helu ala mizbeach. Says the Shul to Giborim, that's the pshat. Tovoyach tevach v'hochein. Tovoyach tevach is shechita. Hochein is Shabbos. These two ideas represented by the ches of the tevach and the hochein, which create Chanukah, are the remes in this week's parsha to the milchoma of Chanukah, the milchoma which is a constant milchoma. I always tell over the story, many of you have heard it from me, but I'll say it again anyway. I was on a plane. I was sitting on a plane. It was an El Al plane. And they brought round food. There was a guy sitting next to me, wasn't wearing a kippah. And the girl brings the food and she says to me, "Your name Rappaport?" And I said, "Yes." She says, "Did you order kosher food?" And I said, "Yes." "Glad kosher food?" And I said, "Yes." This guy sitting next to me and he looks, turns around to me and he says to me, "All El Al food is kosher." I turned around to him and said to him, "My mother's name in Yiddish was Rezel, her English name was Rose, and in a ksuba it says Shoshana Rochel." So he looks at me as if I'm crazy, and he says, "What's that got to do with it?" I said, "As much as what you just said has got to do with it." I said, "Did anybody ever say that halal food wasn't kosher?" I said, "You know, the fact that you've got a hang-up about something is really not my problem." So he says to me, "All halal food is kosher." I said, "Correct. So why are you ordering special kosher food if all halal food is kosher?" I said, "Why are you wearing a suit?" He says to me, "Well, how do you want me to go?" I said, "Naked." He says, "No, I can't walk around naked." Because it goes for about 5 minutes trying to, but it worked out that what he was trying to tell me was, he didn't know how to phrase it, but it's pasnish to walk around naked. I have to wear something. So I said, "So wear a kilt. Or why didn't you wrap yourself up in a tablecloth? Why are you wearing a suit? It's just as good to cover you up as anything else. Elamai, for whatever reason it is, you don't want to wear a suit. You don't want to wear a kilt, you want to wear a suit. So for whatever reason it is, I want to eat glatt kosher, I don't want to eat kosher." So he says, "I don't get this. Either it's kosher or it's not kosher." So I said, "Okay, let me explain to you. In 1970-something, 69, 70, 71, somewhere around that time. There was a Meshugana in Chicago. Chicago, Illinois. He went into a pharmacy and he injected into a bottle of liquid Tylenol, into a few bottles of liquid Tylenol, he injected some type of chemical which resulted in the people purchasing this Tylenol dying. And four people died in Chicago, Illinois, from this Tylenol. Now, the guy injected this into liquid Tylenol in one particular pharmacy in Chicago, Illinois. Within, and this is recorded, you can Google it, you'll see. Within about a week, the entire America stopped buying Tylenol capsules, Tylenol tablets, anywhere in America, and the shares of the company went through the floor. That they were on the verge of bankruptcy. So I said to him, you remember this? He said, yeah. Cool. So I said to him, why? Why? Why did everybody stop eating or taking, whatever the word is, Tylenol capsules, Tylenol tablets? What's it going to do with liquid Tylenol in the bottle? And why is the guy in Miami not going into the store to buy Tylenol because somebody in Chicago died from a bottle of Tylenol? So he said to me, because everybody is scared of dying. And if you're scared of dying, you become an extremist. I said, exactly. I said, you're scared of dying, physically. You don't want to kill your body. So because you don't want to kill your body, you do things which are extremist. There is absolutely no chashash when you go in Miami into the pharmacy that if you buy those Tylenol capsules, you're going to die. More than what? Maybe 0.00000001%. Yet you won't do it. Why? Because it's so important to you, your goof, that you don't want to lose it. I said, there do exist people in the world, believe it or not, whose spiritual life is as important to them as their physical life. And if there is a 0.00000001 chance that what they're going to eat is going to kill them spiritually, then for them it's a Tylenol capsule in Miami. They don't want it. I said, that's the difference between glut kosher and kosher. Now you understand? He said, yeah. Now I said, now you've got no appetite, take my meal. I don't eat it anyway. Macholas Asuras is Mutamtem Misalev. Macholas Asuras is Mutamtem Malev, and it doesn't make any difference whether it definitely is Macholas Asuras, whether it's a Sophic Macholas Asuras, whether it's a Sophic if the Hersh is a good Hersh or not. Whether so-and-so's mother-in-law told me that her sister-in-law told her that 43 years ago this was a good hersher. If it's machal asuris, it's mitamta misalev. Chilul Shabbos, it doesn't make any difference whether it's a minute before Shkia, or 5 minutes before Shkia, or 10 minutes before Shkia. If there's a zman, which the tzibur is makabel as being the zman of Issa Malacha, then you do malacha after that zman, and you are being mechalel Shabbos. So even if you want to go according to those Peskim who are mekel and maintain that you're not mechuyav of the 40 minutes of Yerushalayim, which are very few, very, very few. Most Peskim are machmir. But even according to those few Peskim who are 20 minutes before the Shkia, there's nowhere in Eretz Yisrael, which is mechalel Shabbos after 20 minutes before Shkia. The latest point of being Mekabel Shabbos in the entirety of Eretz Yisrael is 20 minutes before Shkia. And it doesn't make any difference if you smoke the cigarette on Shabbos afternoon or if you smoke the cigarette 5 minutes before Shkia. You are Mekabel Shabbos. You are a Mekabel Shabbos. And it doesn't matter whether 50,000 people have told you the Hechsher is alright. If the food is not right, it's not the Rav who's going to suffer. He's not going to have to bring the korban. You're going to have to bring the korban for eating Macholas Asuras.
Chumash and Mishnah. He doesn't bring the korban, you bring the korban. Why? Because you were metantum your lev. He'll have to answer for whatever he has to answer for. But if somebody on Hanukkah is running off to eat in all sorts of places which are mefukbuk, especially here in Eretz Yisrael now where it's Shemitah, where who knows what you're going to get into, what Isurim you're going to get into, right? Basically, whatever you eat other than water, you're hitting a problem. Even water's not so posh, but if it's not filtered. But whatever you eat, you're definitely running into a problem there. Well, anybody who on Chanukah, his Shabbos is a chol dika Shabbos, either because he's mamish machal Shabbos, or because he's machal Shabbos in anhoga. Standing in a telephone booth the entire Shabbos, with the line disconnected, therefore you can't be Mechal Shabbos, because the whole thing is, basically you can't move in there. And you stand there for 26 hours, all that means is you weren't Mechal Shabbos, that doesn't mean you were Shema Shabbos. Because that's not the way a Jew spends Shabbos, locked up in a telephone booth. There's Shmira Shabbos and there's Chilul Shabbos. Chilul Shabbos is not to be even Isurim. Shmira Shabbos is what a Jew does on Shabbos. What a Jew's Shabbos looks like. So Achas come on Hanukkah, if a Jew is not Shema Shabbos, or Chas V'Shalom is Machal Shabbos. If he's not Shema on Timtum Alev, Chas V'Shalom is Metamtem Es Livoy, and Achas come of a Kama, it's a Tviya on us. We live in a society where everything is disposable goods. And somehow, all of us have attained this understanding that the same is true of Averis. It's disposable. You can get rid of it. You do it, and then you can get rid of it. You'll dab a little bit of the longish man in Ezra. You'll do this, you'll do that. Doesn't work. Doesn't work that way. Has a shpor. It affects the person. But im kol's there. You haven't taken the store sign down. There's still what to talk about. But the minute you machal Shabbos, or you're even isurim machalas asuris, then we're in heavy, heavy, heavy trouble.